You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Soul Chronicles podcast, where we discuss navigating life and times in the sneaker, sports, entertainment industries, and corporate America. Today, we have an exciting guest. As I was just mentioning before we start recording, I talk about this woman in so many episodes because I did so much work with Def Jam and so many times she played a role in that. So we're excited to hear her story of how she got into the game. And, you know, it's just a lot to uncover today. I'm co-host Muhammad Al-Muhajir along with
Hey, everybody, it's Nikita Newell Hall. So excited to be back with another episode of The Soul Chronicles. Thanks for tuning in today.
So we are going to jump right in. Today, our guest is Ms. Shanita Floyd. Welcome, Shanita, to The Soul Chronicles.
Hi, thanks for having me. You guys are doing such a great job with this. It's like my dream, like Soul Chronicles. You know, I'm a sneakerhead. So when you said you were starting this, I was like, wow, that's so dope. But yeah.
You know, what's your favorite sneaker? What's your favorite? Like, you know, the holy grail of your sneaker collection? Because I know you have a lot of sneakers.
Oh my goodness. You know, it's probably something that I can no longer fit thanks to my son. Like I used to get a boatload of sneakers from Muhammad back in the day, and it would always be something that was like, I don't know, is that dope? And then you wear it one time, like, all right, I'm just gonna wear it. And then it's just like, it was a pair of Air Max 95s.
Five.
Yep. But they were red. I had two pair. I had one was red and one was aqua, and they zipped up the front. And you know, I think the red ones were patent leather. And then like but they were just so dope. So I love those sneakers, but of course I can no longer wear them and they have been put out to pasture.
Right. So. I saw one time you were like selling or giving away and I was like, that is my Rasheed Wallace.
Oh yes, listen, how about this? Last year I gave them to my son because he was coming at that size, right? Mm-hmm. How about right after the pandemic, he can't fit any of them. His feet them blew past everything. So I still have those. I haven't given them away. They were going to my son and now he can't wear them. So it's like, great. So now I have these Rasheed Wallaces.
And those are first of all, me and you wear the same size. So those are like my personal pair. And I don't know if you asked for them or something. I was like, okay.
Give me a pair of those.
So Muhammad, are you lobbying to get your shoes back? Is that what I hear?
I mean, if she can't fit them, but I just went. Okay, y'all know I'm in Ghana, but I just was in the U.S. I went to my house in Brooklyn, and I have like tubs of still. Like how I still got sneakers, I don't know. But now my daughter Debbie can wear my shoes. So I was uncovering all kind of retro. This half of them had disintegrated, but
yeah, they disintegrate. So you gotta be careful.
Yes. But yeah, no, I was pulling out some pink Air Force Ones and some different things. So yeah, definitely most of them go to the kids.
Oh, and in honor of Black History Month, I still have my Black History Month Air Force Ones too. Can't fit them, but I still have them. I'm like, nobody's worthy of these just yet. So
love it.
Okay, well, let's get into it, Shanita. I think so. When we met you, you were product manager at Def Jam. I don't know if you started your career at Def Jam or like, you know, how did you get into the game?
Oof. Yeah, actually, I didn't start my career at Def Jam. I actually started my career actually as an entrepreneur. I was in college at St. John's University, and then I started my own street team. And after doing, because I did a couple of internships in the music space, because originally my major was criminal justice, and then I switched it to communications and journalism. And then I did an internship with a PR firm that handled music clients. So I was like, wow, this is like a real thing. Okay. All right. And I, you know, not to date myself, but it was like, they had a couple of my favorite rappers on there and on their roster. And I was like, all right, this is cool. Then I did a, the second internship I did for the second semester. I was at Epic Records, and Epic at the time was really, it was huge, from Michael Jackson to Luther Vandross. Like, they had all the big R&B artists or whatever. So I was like, all right, cool. So while during that internship, I started my own street team company. And it was small, you know, we were just trying to, it was me and my friend Tanya, and we were just trying to, you know, get a couple of, you know, projects here and there, just like, well, whatever, we'll go to the clubs, we'll hand out flyers, we'll do that. Okay, street team, Rusty Nuno Music is born. And then while I was on the street team, started to expand it. I was working half of it, half of the time I was doing my street team company, the other half I was in a management company, and I needed to branch out a bit. So I found I needed someone to handle Baltimore, DC area. And someone was like, oh, there's this kid, Kevin Lyles, it's Kevin and Kevin. He used to have another a partner that did New York stuff. And Kevin Weeks did New York. And then Kevin Lyles was Baltimore, DC. So got on the phone with Kevin, you know, back then he was working at a place called World Connections Travel. So we were all just like really hustling back then, like day job, street teams, all this kind of stuff. He was also an intern for Def Jam at the time. So I brought him on as my okay. Baltimore.
Yes. Hold on. Kevin Lyles worked for you, Shanita?
Yeah, he was my Baltimore leg of my street team.
Oh my God. Okay.
So
have no idea.
Listen, it's definitely one of those things that you just kind of say, wow, that really happened. But, you know, we were friends, and I was, you know, we had a couple of clients or whatever. Motown was a client, and I think that was the biggest client, and then a couple of indie labels or whatever. But, you know, he handled all the Baltimore stuff, and he wasn't working at Def Jam yet. He was just kind of interning. And back then, Def Jam, as ratchet as they were, interning wasn't like what it is now, where it's all corporate and people are getting paid. It's like, yeah, just do this. So he's working for me, and we just stayed friends. So even when, you know, we weren't working on a project, we just stayed friends. And he was like, you know, I was like, yo, if you get the job at Def Jam, you know, bring me in. So he was like, oh, okay, cool. Lo and behold, maybe about a year later or so, they wanted to bring him up to, they hired him permanently to work down in the DC area, if I'm not mistaken. Then they wanted to, you know, promote him to be like the general manager of the radio department, because his specialty back then was radio. And he, so they said, oh, you know, so I said, yo, I said, come on, you gotta get me up there at Def Jam. Gotta get me up there at Def Jam. Now, wait, before he started doing that, so I paid my dues by going to an interview. He told me that the guy who was running the radio department at the time, well, they call it the national. He wasn't really running it, but he was the national. So he was like second in charge in radio. I'm not gonna say his name.
Okay.
But anyway, so I go up to Def Jam, as ratchet as it was, once again, 160 Varick, go there to interview with this guy, air quotes, and I'm sitting in the lobby for like, I don't know, like 3-4 hours. And I'm like, yeah, listen here, I have my own company. Why am I sitting here looking crazy? But I'm like, no, this is Def Jam. Just sit and wait. Finally, now mind you, there's no cell phones back then, so I can't just call. I mean, there are cell phones, but you're gonna pay.
Only the hustlers had them.
Yeah, only the hustlers had them. So you know, I'm like, I would, you know, back then I would have called Kevin and be like, yo, get your man to come out. What? Well, I'm still sitting here. So anyway, I wait. I tell the receptionist, I don't know who, I think it was Denise at the time. I said, listen, I'm still waiting here for the guy, for the person.
Dude.
I'm still sitting here waiting for Thomas Lytle, you know, blah, blah, blah. Finally, he comes out and he goes, hey, so he was like basically holding his hand out for my resume. And I'm like, oh no, I thought I was meeting with you. Like, cause I'm thinking resume, I could have mailed you that. Like I could have left that and left 3-4 hours ago. So he was like, oh no, baby, I'm sorry. I can't meet with you right now. I was like, okay, left. And was like, all right, you know what? Def Jam. Like, I got home and I called Kevin and, you know, and I'm like, yo, that was crazy. I was sitting there for, all right, no worries. Leave it alone. All right. Nothing happens. Maybe 6 months or so go by. and they want to promote Kevin. Kevin's coming now, leaving Baltimore to come up to New York to take said guy's job.
Wow.
So he becomes now the new, they made it the general manager of the promotions department. And he says to me, I said, yo, Kev, you got to get me in there. You coming to New York now. Come on, you got to get me in there. And so finally he calls, he says, so they, I might have a job for you. They want me to come up to New York and they want me to have an assistant. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, and like.
That got to do with
but
me.
What's my job going to be though?
Oh, like, right, exactly. I can help you find an assistant if that's what you need. But what's my title? So he was like, no. And not to mention, he says, he you know, so I'm like, oh God, all right, fine. All right, how much does it pay? Because I'm thinking like, whatever. And he says, $12,000 a year. $12,000. So I'm like, wait. So as history goes, of course I took the job, but I told him, I said, but I gotta be able to keep my street team on the side. I said, cause I'm never gonna, now I'm still living at home with my mother. So it really didn't matter. But you know, I was like, I still gotta keep my street team job. And he was like, all right, fine. As long as you keep it on the low. So did that, had, you know, my company, plus I, you know, was working as an assistant at Def Jam, which thank the Lord did not last long because okay. The person who was one of the things in my street team company, we went around to the colleges a lot. So we did a lot of college marketing, a lot of college promotions. So the guy who was doing college promotions, he was leaving. And so then I begged, I was like, Kev, you gotta let me take that job. You gotta let me, well, you haven't, you only been here for so and so long. I'm like, so what? You was only in Baltimore for a little bit of time before they wanted to promote you. And so then I think Leora Cohen got involved and he was like, Kevin, just let her take the job. And so then I took the job.
All right, finally a good story about Leor.
Okay, and so yeah.
Anyway,
I took that job. I took said job, I loved it. That's where I kind of, you know, started doing a lot of the tours with the, with all the artists. I mean, you know, you definitely will cut your, you know, back then you cut your teeth on those tours. Like you learned artist development, artist relations, you know, you learn how to deal with shady promoters at the club who tell you they ain't got all the money. Like, I mean, I was doing everything from going to the clubs. And when we started doing Def College Jam, we were, you know, it was a paid tour. But the money really was going back through the label to make sure we paid for all the hotels and the, you know, all that. So the artists really weren't getting paid and it wasn't a whole lot, but there I was with a backpack full of cash after a show, like, yeah, great. I've got all this money. Like, and I think it was maybe Eric Sermon's security guards would come with me to go. I was like, could y'all come with me to go get the money from the promoter?
Wow. Yeah, so that's what I'm about to ask you. Like, who were some of those artists at the beginning that you were doing the college stuff with?
So I did, Onyx was definitely one of the first groups I took on tour. Good Lord, a group called Flatliners, mm-hmm. which happened to be Russell's nephew's group.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I had Eric Sermon. And then after I did that first tour, and it might've been some other smaller groups, then after the first tour, then we added in like, you know, at the time it was Month of the Man. So then it was Red Man and Method Man. And then we had Sugar, Sweet Tea. She changed her name from Sweet Tea to Sugar from back in the day. And yeah, so that was the bulk. And Eric Sermon came out when he did his solo project. And then so, because we, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And because we had Meth doing like one of his first tours and stuff, we always had to take along, you know, part of the deal was you gotta take along some Wu affiliates, okay, and some of Wu-Tang. So if they had a project coming, so at one point here I was the sole person running this tour. There was a tour manager, but like as far as dealing directly with the artist all the time, that was me. I had maybe like five groups plus. Sometimes Raekwon and Ghostface would come. Lord, they would always show up at the end of a show and we'd be on our way to the next city. And we'd be like, listen, y'all missed the show. We going to the next city. And then we had a group called Sons of Man that was part of Wu-Tang. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, and then we had Redman who then would bring along Keith Murray. Mm-hmm. And then we also had Little Jamal. So like, when I tell you, like, I paid my dues on those tours. Like there was a time that I remember calling Lior and telling him I quit.
How many times?
And then he gives me, so I'm listening, people may have bad Lior stories and I probably have one or two too, but this one was a good one. Like he literally sat me on that phone because of course, you know, and he gave me his full on Run DMC, Sucker MC's tour story about how tough it was and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then he said the one thing to me that stuck with me to this day, which was, listen, you're moving those guys. You are moving those guys. They are doing what you say. He said, they come to you, they ask you, show flow, what we doing? Show flow, well, where we gotta go? And he said, your strength in this music business is being able to move artists. If you can't move artists, you got no future. And you're moving artists. So I was like, all right, well, I'll stay.
You've been moving artists ever since.
I mean, listen, I do my best. I keep it real with them. And I think that's really the strength. Like just keeping it real with them, not lying to them, just, you know, and being an ear. Sometimes it's just being an ear.
Yeah, I love that. And you know,
I miss my artists though. I miss them though. I do.
You miss Debbie Sin? No.
Yes. Honestly, I really do. I mean, I have so many stories about that time. That's probably one of the babysitting, but also big sistering, really is what it was.
Yes.
That's why me and Beth are so close. I always call him my little big brother because they're I remember one time we were on a video shoot in France. Lord, he had this crazy idea. So we go all the way to France to shoot a video, not even the sexy part of France, not Paris. So I can't even say Paris. And he was so rotten. Good Lord. Y'all know sometimes meth back then could be so rotten. And I remember we got into a screaming match and I'm crying. Now, mind you, it's just my job. Like if you don't want to do the video, what does that mean to me? But I'm literally crying. And then I think after that, it was just like, okay, yeah, we family. This is crazy.
I love it. And look, can we have a moment of acknowledgement for Meth's current Essence Magazine digital cover? I mean, if we can make a little space to acknowledge.
He's
wonderfulness doing it. That is. I mean, he's your little brother, Shanita, so maybe you can't see him that way, but I'm going to take a moment for the rest of the women in the world to just, you know, let out a collective.
Trust me, I get so many DMs and like, so wait, he really is married? Yeah, yes, he is. Thank you very much.
It is so amazing though, when artists could have like these multiple cycles in their careers and resurgence. I mean, it's like amazing. Not many people can do that. Like he's just reinvented himself. And like, that is just really kudos to him. Cause I know it's like only the grace that can happen. You know, you can't control that. It just happens to you.
That's right. That's right. So that you know, that was my Def Jam story. And I went through the ranks there after doing all the tours and college promotions. We did a lot of stuff on all the eight, you know, everyone swears I went to an HBCU because I was so embedded in all of those schools, but I'm like, no, I actually went to PWI. But I was on those campuses so much, they all think I went there, but like we did a lot of work at those colleges on that level.
You know,
so.
Shanita, it's actually how I got my start in entertainment at Grambling State University, go Tigers. And I worked in radio. And the way I really got interested in entertainment is through all the record execs coming through with their tours.
Yep.
So whether, you know, it was, you know, Ken James who helped run our group who later went on to Columbia, or, you know, Demet Guidry who was at Columbia, or even, you know, Bob Sumpter, you know, we talked about bringing Def Comedy Jam to Grambling, right? Mm-hmm. And so all those guys I sort of knew from, you know, Charm Warren, who was at Tommy Boy back in the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, from them coming through Grambling. But here's the beauty of what you guys did. Not only did you just bring the acts through, but you were also very much available to all the young kids like me who were in school and just wanted to get on. You know, you guys would take time if it was, you know, after the show, if y'all were going to go have dinner somewhere, you would invite, you know, the radio DJs from the colleges to come. You would exchange numbers, you know, you would help us get internships. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's just a real shout out to all the college promoters who did come through the HBCUs, because you guys didn't just like, you know, introduce your act, buy our stuff, buy. Y'all took time. Y'all hung on the yard with us. You know, right. it was a real camaraderie. And I do think, you know, you and that whole group of promoters are responsible for a lot of careers that you probably don't even know about. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. So I can just say for me, that was my first introduction to entertainment and specifically to music, because I was interested in news. And so that's why I was on the radio, because I was doing the news. And then when I started getting introduced to, you know, the college promoters coming through, I said, oh, I want to do music. And so that's how I really, you know, got my start. So these worlds all do connect.
Listen, the college was the bread and butter of hip hop back then. Like, no major stations wouldn't play certain records until it was bumping at the colleges. So we not only did, you know, focused on college radio, we also focused on college events. So we would—
Howard, you know, Homecoming, HU. Exactly.
Yes, that was our tour where we had Meth, and then we had Biggie. It was our little, you know, college tour, college jam. And it was Biggie Smalls with Redman, Method Man. And if you see, I still have the flyer. And Flatliners, we brought our tour through there and then added Biggie too, and, you know, made it a real big deal. So yeah, but no, that was the bread and butter, all the college. I mean, and, you know, I still have some of those people like Shaka Zulu. He was in Atlanta at the time. And I remember every time I was bringing an artist through Atlanta, I'd be like, all right, Shaka, where do we need to go? Where do we need to go? And he basically would kind of like write my itinerary for me back then. And then I'd be like, okay, great. Got that part done. Call the next city. Like, okay, great. Where are we going? So you call the college person and they'd always hook you up with like, all right, this is a new spot you need to go to. And that was it. So thank you too, Nikita.
Shanita, okay, we can't like brush through your whole like Def Jam career like that fast. So from college promotions, talk to us a little bit about the roles, because you kind of went through a lot of roles.
Right. So after college promotions, I remember I was doing an event for college for one of the college events, and we used to actually partner with what we call the branch managers and the branch people. Back when the record labels, we had huge distribution. So there'd be a branch in Boston, a branch in DC, a branch, like, so we had them scattered all around the country. So we were doing, you know, events with them. And I believe at the time it might've been Montel Jordan. It was like a, this is how we do it thing or whatever. And so I was kind of making my own like materials. Like, I didn't go through the art department. I knew how to do all that stuff myself and didn't go through the marketing department. And so one day Julie Greenwald was like, wow, this looks great. You should be in marketing. And I was like, okay. And the next thing I know, I was in marketing. So, and that's the beauty of how it was back then too. It's like, you know, because it was such a tight knit situation, you could show your worth a little bit more without like a whole lot of rigmarole and drama. So Julie, and so then she went to Kevin and was like, yeah, I want her in marketing. I think somebody might've been leaving at the time. I think it was Jason. And so they were like, yeah. And because I had the relationships with the artists too, it made it an easier transition. So then I did marketing for the next, I don't know, it was like 6 years or so, something like that. And then bounced from marketing, from domestic marketing. We were opening an office in Japan, and they wanted Def Jam Japan. They wanted Method Man and Redman to go perform to open up the office. So the person who was running international at the time, he was like, I just need somebody to go that make, you know, because of course you want to make sure that artist gets to Japan and actually does what they're there mm-hmm. to do versus making a free trip.
And you know, you're the master of moving the artists.
I had to move at me, especially those two. So we had Red and Meth go to perform to open up the offices for Def Jam Japan. And when we were coming back, the head of the company said, of the department said, yeah, I really want you to help me find someone, you know, in that can do all the hip hop and the urban stuff or whatever, because he ran it for, you know, the whole island Def Jam music group at the time. So he says, I just want someone that can do all. I was like, what about me? He was like, because nobody really wanted to be an international back then, because nobody paid attention to them. Mm-hmm. See, now everybody is so global and we're just like, we worldwide. Yeah, but back then it was hard to even get. I used to tell people, like when the person who was doing international at the time, they called me as a product manager, be like, hi, you know, so-and-so in Germany wants to do an interview with Meth Men, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I can't get this guy to go across the street to Hot 97. Back then we were like across the street. I was like, I can't get him to go across the street to Hot 97. You think I can get him to go to Germany? No, it's not going to happen. So nobody really wanted to deal with the international department back then. But I was like, you know what? I love to travel and I need a change. And so I was like, I'll do it. So that's what
Shanita, at that point, did, like, I know Muhammada, this is like your forte, just really early on, seeing the influence of hip hop across the world, knowing that this was a worldwide movement in terms of what hip hop could and would be to the world. Did you have any of that, Shanita, when you took on the role? Did you feel like there could be something more huge about yeah. hip hop worldwide, or was it just like an adventure for you?
No, I knew that it could be big after seeing, you know, the opening in Japan and just kind of knowing. And I think, Muhammad, if I'm not mistaken, when you did your thing, was I in international at the time?
Hip Hop, the New World Order? Is that
what you're talking about? Yeah, when she did the New World Order. You, or was I at Warner at that time?
No, you were still at Def Jam, because you got me Method Man to be in my documentary.
Right.
So you were still there. You had not gone to international yet, but you, it probably was right before.
Right. And so when you kind of, you know, you know, there were people that were in the department before me that had the knowledge and the potential, and they would tell me like, no, this is really big. And, you know, I think a couple of times we had, like, Meth would do, you know, records with people from over there. Funny enough, the first time I got my passport, you know, back then, as old as I am, we used to be able to go to Bahamas and Jamaica. All you needed was a birth certificate. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, but to go to Europe, you needed a passport, and I didn't have one. And one of my first trips as a product manager was they had Meth to do some record with a group in the UK, and it was like a pop act, and Leora was like, all right, you have to take him. I'm like, yeah, I wish I could, but I don't have a passport. He was like, get one. I was like, okay. So I had to go get the 1-day passport, all that kind of stuff, and the next couple of days I was off. And Meth said he would only do this performance. It was actually for the Brit Awards. He said, I will only do the I'm only going to the UK if I could fly the Concorde.
My God.
And guess what they did? Okay. They bought that dude a ticket on the Concorde. So there we were on my very first trip out of this country, outside of Bahamas and Jamaica. I was on the Concorde, like, ow, I didn't like it. But, you know, it was fun.
Yeah. But, so I think I talked about and you know, we did an episode on Method Man, and again, I feel like everybody knew that you were the one who could make anything happen with him. And I had a commercial. I convinced Nike to book him in this commercial, and they hadn't really done anything with rappers as close as Nike is right now with hip hop and everything. Like, they hadn't done anything like that where a rapper was in the commercial. And so I was like, no, you know, Method Man. And I know I was like, oh my God, I called you. I was like, okay, I booked Meth for this commercial. And you were like, you had something else to do. And I was like, what? I was like, oh my God, this is a disaster. And you were like, well, there's another person. Her name is Phelan. And she's going to be the one. I'm like, I ain't never heard of no Phelan. I don't know about no Phelan. All I know is Shanita Floyd. And I was like almost in tears because I was like, the way I had fought to have this man in his commercial. And I just want to say, like, y'all was all a force, though, for real. Like, she was totally on point. And he was, I don't know if he, I mean, I did know him too, though he totally behaved, you know, he was there on time, everything. But like, y'all was all on point. I mean, it was, yeah.
Yeah, you know, meth, you know, back then he could be hit or miss sometimes because you catch him on the wrong day and he's like, I just don't want to do it. And it really was, it became one of those things where you kind of had to know his likes and dislikes. I remember Vibe magazine came and was like, oh, we want to do this piece and it's called, and he's going to hold up a book and it's called, I don't know if it was like Parenting for Dummies. See, there's certain, you know, like keywords. Don't call him dumb. Nothing for Dummies. And you know, it's a whole series of books that's called Such and Such for Dummies, you know, Kitchen Repair for Dummies or Taxes for Dummies or whatever it was. And I was like, yeah, I don't know if that's going to go over too well with dummies. Like, he doesn't like that. And lo and behold, when they went to him, he was like, yeah, I don't get down with that. That doesn't make no sense to me. But like, you know,
if I can't say today, he is on that Digital Essence cover for anybody who may want to reference that, you know, things do have a way of turning around and, you know, God works in mysterious ways. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes, he is definitely doing his thing when it comes to that. So, but yeah, no, that, you know, time was, I remember when you booked that and I was like, oh man, like I can't be there. Like I can't. So, but it's fine. Again, you know, Phelan stepped in and was able to make, and I still have that commercial on a VHS somewhere. So.
That your son is probably looking at like, what is that?
He's like, a VHS tape? What's that? Listen, he looks at CDs. Like, what's that?
Oh yeah. What are we going to do with this? Wow.
So Shanita, was the international role your last role at Def Jam?
That was my last role at Def Jam. I think my last outing was touring with Jay-Z, and he did his first international tour back then. And so that was the last thing I did. And then I bounced over to Warner when they were starting up a new division called Asylum Records. So went over to head up marketing over there. Definitely a different situation. It was more of, you know, it was a distribution arm, and we just kind of provided label services. So didn't really have too much, certain artists you don't really have a lot of relationships with because you're kind of like putting out the record and then that's it. You're just making sure that the record, you know, is serviced and, you know, you do, you know, baseline marketing is really what you do with those records. And I remember someone, you know, at Def Jam, we were so embedded into our artists' lives that we kind of knew everything about them, you know, and you know, I go over to Warner and it's so different. And I remember someone bringing me a travel authorization to sign, and I'm looking at the name. I'm like, who in the hell is this? And then at the time it was one of the biggest artists, biggest records on the label at the time. And I was looking at his real name, like, who? Like, that's how much we really did not know them like that, you know? So, but yeah, it was definitely different. And, you know, I did that for a couple of years and then, you know, kind of moved into management at Kevin's management company. At the same time, doing my own thing, starting to do a lot of work with Scarface. And yeah, that was it.
So you and Kevin's paths crossed quite a number of times. So what happened with that moment?
Well, when I was leaving Def Jam, you know, and I try to tell people, please pay attention to every single email that comes your way from departments like HR. So at the time, you know, they, you know, of course, all these corporations, they change up their rules, and it's just like disrespectful. But, you know, at the time they had an HR thing where if you got let go from the company and you had already put in, let's say like 10 years, you know, with the company, you could get a year severance, you know, and on top of, you know, unemployment or whatever. So they were stopping that. So I think as of I think it was May, they were going to stop it and was like, now it'd be like, yeah, you could be here 10 years and walk away with 2 weeks severance. So I remember saying to Kev, like, yo, and I knew at the time, Kevin, Lior, Julie, Kevin was still there, but Lior had already left. Julie was pregnant and everybody knew she ain't coming back here. She going to Warner with Lior. We know this. We could feel it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I know y'all are leaving, Kev. Fire me. He did not understand what I was doing. I was strategically moving. I was like, please let me go. Please let me go. Let me go. So I wound up getting quote unquote let go so I could get a full year's, almost a whole year's severance. Yes. And then, yeah, I was like, kind of reminds me of Muhammad with her Nike shenanigans. But
girl, that is a whole nother episode. Do you hear me? That is one whole episode unto itself.
Let me tell you, when I tell you the way Shanita is always crisscrossing in my life, listen, so you know, when I left Nike, I went to graduate school and I needed a reference letter. Shanita wrote my reference letter.
Yes, yes, I love it. Because we got to look out for each other, right?
That's right. That's right. Wow. So yeah, when I knew that Kevin was going to wind up going over to Warner too, I didn't know where I was going, to be honest. I was like, good, give me a year severance. I'm going to just chill and I'm going to just figure it out. Right, and then I'm gone maybe a month or so, about a month to almost 2 months or whatever. And Lior sends an email and was like, I need you. I'm starting a new division and it's going to be called, it had a whole different name at the time. And he was like, and they want you to do marketing. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I'm still thinking, all right, fine. It ain't started yet. I had like two and a half months of freedom. And then I was back in an office. So, you know, it was fine with me. I was still getting my severance. So I was like, can't stop that. And then getting paid from Warner and then, you know, still doing my little side things.
Yeah. I love this story about, you know, keeping teams together because, you know, Nikita and I worked together at other places before we worked at Nike, right? Yep. And it's like when you know and trust someone, you know they're going to have your back. They know, you know what I mean? You know, we see how important that was. Look how many places you guys all work together. And Nikita and I definitely have done the same. I actually took over her position at Nike. So
I remember you were so new too. First, everybody was like, oh, you need to call Nikita. I remember the first time I think I might've called Nikita and she was like, oh no, you need to call Muhammad. I was like, oh, I thought I was just getting a runaround. I was like, oh, okay. No. She done graduated.
Like, this is her baby now. This is Muhammad's baby.
Right.
She is going to take it to the next level, which she actually absolutely did. So,
yeah.
I just think, you know, listen, you know, when we talk about these stories, you know, we're not just sharing them gratuitously just to like pat ourselves on the back. What we're hoping to do is that people hear about our story, hear about where we've been and what we did and how we did it, and really be inspired, right, to do their own thing. And so what I hope they get from this is that, you know, we can work together, particularly as young Black women, having each other's backs, looking out for each other's, promoting each other,
right,
making sure everybody gets paid, because there's enough money in the earth realm for all of us. So, you know, when Muhammad and I come together with our group and with our tribe, it's a no competition zone. It's making sure everybody can reach their absolute highest potential. And what can we do to ensure that? Because what we know for sure is that the narrative that we don't stick together and we can't work together and we can't do together is what I think is something that's politically derived and 100% untrue. And we're really proof of that. So that's what I love most about, you know, having this conversation with you two ladies, is just knowing that, you know, we have always championed each other, and so many other Black women who, you know, have worked alongside of us and ones who came behind us. And I hope that those listening now will really think about, you know, how can I uplift a Black woman today? What is it that I can do? How can I take time out of my day to take that interview, take that informational interview with a young girl calling you from Hampton or FAMU, you know, contribute to a scholarship fund for a young Black girl today. Like, that's what I really want to come out of this conversation, more than just the entertainment and the, you know, sharing our stories, but right. That some real action can happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times, you know, people talk about it, but they don't actually do it. It looks cool to kind of fake the funk on social media nowadays, but they don't really do it. You know, like, I knew that when I was working with Kevin at the management company, we had to do a Keisha Cole initiative in her hometown in Oakland. And I was like, Muhammad is going to get it done, because I know her work ethic. And if she doesn't know something, she's going to find out. And I'm not going to have to be like, okay, well, did you get this? And did you get that? Did you get this? I knew that she would just be like, I got it. Done. Like, I mean, I don't know that person, but I'm going to call them and I'm going to get to know them. So, you know, I knew that was so, yeah, that was, man, we actually have done stuff together.
I know. So I think you posted on social media and be like, I need an event planner in the Bay Area. I'm like, what? Hold up now. That's my, like, all my family is out there. I was like, yes, I can do that. And I was like, in Philly or something at the time. And I was like, coordinating this thing. And as somebody posted on my Instagram the other day about, like, how I used to work my budgets, right? And I was like, literally everybody in my family, all my friends at some point got some checks. And that Keisha Cole Day, which was an amazing event, it was so much fun. I know I had my cousins, my father, like, everybody was working on the Keisha Cole Day. Oh my God. So yeah, but definitely, you know, when you hire your people, not just hire your boys or your girl, but the ones who are going to hold your back, hold you down, and right. You know they're going to pull through. Good. Yeah.
Yep. The ones that's going to make you look good and be like, great, that versus like, oh my God, they done screwed this up. And now this girl is calling Kevin talking about, yo, people messed up my whole event. It's like, not here.
No, never. Not on our watch. It's so funny. My friends, you know, I would tell them, oh, I'm doing this event on such and such. I want you to come and be like, oh, that sounds so dope. I'd be like, yeah, but it started at 7, but I want you to come at 6. And they'd be like, oh, okay, cool. Cause you know, VIP, like, yeah. And then they get there, I'd be like, okay, now
you're gonna work the door.
Corey Davis Porter, shout out. Corey's at the NBA, one of the highest ranking Black women over there. Corey has so many stories. She'd be like, okay, I'm coming to this. Now, am I working or am I just hanging out? I'm like, well, you're gonna work a little bit first, but then after that, you're going to definitely get that.
Wow. Shanita, so talk to us. I know you're working in the back in the music industry now, but talk to us, like, how did you transition out? And then how did you get back into it?
Well, after, while I was at Warner is when a lot in my life started to happen. Like, my mom had gotten sick. I spent like close to a year, like, shuttling between, I live in Jersey, my mom lived in the Bronx, and then she'd have appointments, and the office was in Manhattan, she'd have, you know, appointments everywhere. I'd get up at the crack of dawn, drive from Jersey to the Bronx, make sure she went to chemo and radiation, and then drive down to the office. Then after work, I'd go back up to make sure she was okay at home, and then back to Jersey. And I did this, like, I think she had radiation every day, chemo once a week. And, you know, it was just a lot. It was a lot. And then after, you know, 8-9 months of her going through this, then she passed away. And, like, of course, that was like the biggest shock, because I was like, there's no way she's not going to survive this. Like, she's got to survive this. And she did. So, and then shortly thereafter is when I got pregnant with my son. So that became another source of, like, you know, and they considered my pregnancy a high risk pregnancy, because I had had fibroid surgery. So they were saying that, you know, and at the time the fibroid surgery was still kind of like in the experimental phase. It was a UFE at the time. And it was still experimental where it kind of cuts off, this is going into a whole health thing, but like kind of cuts off the blood supply to your uterus, like so that you don't have, you know, so the fibroids can kind of die off. So as soon as I got pregnant, they were like, you need to go directly to a high risk, you know, OBGYN, you know, so that now here again, I got to go every single week. I got to go to the GYN to be checked and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, wow, this is like my mom all over again. And, you know, after, you know, he came, everything was fine. And then I went back to work. And then I think he was three by the time I left Warner. But during that time, one of the labels that we worked closely with was Rap-A-Lot. So when I left there, Scarface was starting to do some stuff on his own. And so then I started working closely with him. So I kind of, if like resume wise, I kind of never really left the music industry. I kind of started to, you know, take on doing a lot of projects on my own. So like I had a bunch of independent projects through my company. I named 6307. My mother was 63 when she died in 2007. So you know, so I kind of never left, but I wasn't at a label. You know, I worked in management with Kevin for a while. Maybe two or three years working with him, but simultaneously still doing my own thing. It was always like, okay, this is cool, but I still need to kind of do this at the same time. And, you know, at the time, Kevin had a lot of acts. So it was kind of, I couldn't take on, but so much because he had a lot of acts. He had, at one point we had Trey Songz, Young Jeezy, Nelly, Estelle, and maybe three or four other like new artists. And, you know, he had, who else did he have? He had, at one point he had Sonya Richards Ross, the track star. He had, I think a football player. So it was a lot we had to kind of go through. And, you know, so it was, it, and then of course me on my, on the side, I'd have like, you know, maybe an independent label would say, oh, we need some marketing help. And then of course I was still, you know, rolling with Scarface. So, and then after I left him full-time, I kind of did my own thing full-time for a while. And then that started to kind of, I don't know, just kind of like, you know, I was hustling, you know, and I don't really like that too much. Okay. Cause it was you know, now you're on your own. There's no steady plus this, right, you know, that's right. The, you know, what I was, had always been doing. I got a little, this will always be here, but then I got a little plus something with my side hustle. So I, you know, and you just kind of like leave for a minute and just kind of like try to figure yourself out. You know, I would go, it'd be so many places that, you know, they say, oh, we're looking for, you know, a marketing person or whatever. And then I'd be interviewing with someone and I'd be like, this is not going to work because I've been doing this long. And then you've been
born
and I could feel it, you know, listen, we could, you know, mix words and stuff like that. But like, you could feel when someone feels slightly intimidated, they give you that whole vibe, that whole feel like, oh no, you know, I'm not hiring her. You know what I mean? And you're thinking like, no, I'm just here. I could do the job. So let me do, you know, because technically.
Let me do my little part. It's going to be fine.
My little part. I'm fine. You got this, girl. You know, dude, you got this. But, you know, they're not interested in that kind of stuff. It's like, They're looking through like my little, you know, resume with the portfolio and the whole nine. And they're like, oh, you did all this? Yeah, it's a little something, you know, but you're not ready for that. And a lot of people just are not ready for it. They're like looking at it. And instead of being confident in what they have already and that they're, you got the relationships here. I'm new girl coming in. I'm just trying to do my little part, but that's not what they're interested in. So it's and you know, the music industry, it can be all very, you know, full of competition between people. Everybody's kicking with everybody in the photos, but at the end of the day, they're like, yeah, let me make sure that I'm more buttoned up next to the boss than this one, because, you know, trying to keep my little position. So, you know, it was all good. And then, you know, while I was at Warner, like my mom was the first one to pass away. Then right behind her, all of my aunts passed away. So like her sister, it was four of them, four girls all together. One, every year I was going to a funeral. And it was just, it really, you know, a lot of people say, I can't believe you never took any time off. Like my mother's youngest sister was the one that I would call like after I had my son, because my mother wasn't around when my son was born. So I would call her like, Aunt Junie, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And she'd be like, well, is he too hot? Is it what? Because I'd be like, he's crying and he won't stop. And she's like, all right, well, maybe he's too hot. Or is he hungry? Or is he changed? Make sure he's not, you know, all the basic stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just, you know, needed someone to talk to. And so then she kind of stepped in. And then maybe, I don't know, maybe a year and a half after that, she passed away too. So, you know, it was just like a really, really rough time. And then, you know, I just got married like after I had the baby, then I got married. And so that was another whirlwind. And it was just like, to this day, I'm still trying to figure out why I'm still standing, to be honest. I ain't even gonna lie. There are days that I wonder how are you still here? Because I definitely felt times that I wanted to fold. So, yep.
Yeah. I mean, just listening to your story is so much parallels mine. I mean, I remember I was on my way to on a Paris trip with SWV and a bunch of basketball players with Nike when I learned that my mom was diagnosed with a really rare breast cancer. And I'm an only child, so she was absolutely my world. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, not even a year later, she passed away and I just kept going. And for me, I felt like if I stopped that I was just gonna implode and would never get back up. And I didn't really have the tools and the knowledge to know that, no, if you fall out, you will eventually get back up. And it's okay to fall out. You probably actually need to just take a minute. And I didn't see that as strength. You know, I saw that as, you know, a weakness that I couldn't afford. Like I always felt like other people, other women, other races, like they have permission to have a nervous breakdown and to fall out and to pass out and to be in grief. But we, me, I don't really have that permission. Mm-hmm. So I have to keep going. And it really does compound. You know, when you start to mix grief with stress from these really high pressured jobs, and then you start to mix that with, you know, parenthood, you know, getting married, you know, just like your whole story is so related, because I got married a year after my mom passed away. And then, you know, a couple of years after that, I had my first child. And so, you know, all of these things, you just never get a chance to really take care of yourself mentally, mm-hmm. emotionally. Then when you start to have children, the things that happen in your body, and like you, I had two sort of high risk pregnancies and two C-sections, and, you know, just, you know, a little bit of postpartum depression where you're just feeling like, I don't feel right, but I don't know why. And then we don't give ourselves permission to really be down, because societally, in our community, even, and in the greater society, you're a picture of success. So really, what do you have to be down about? Does that make sense? It's like, well, you know, you've done this and you have this and you've experienced that and you have these resources, and well, other people don't have it. There's a single mom out there with eight kids somewhere and she's still going. So I should write. And so we don't really have, in the past, I will say in the past, we hadn't really had permission to just stop and say, I'm not okay. And I need a minute. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that today, you know, people know that you deserve to stop, mm-hmm. and that the world will be here for you when you come back. And I didn't know that. I didn't feel that security.
Yeah. And I think the good thing is for as awful as social media can be, I do think that at least there are so many different entities that will kind of like tell you like it's okay to not be okay. Like, you know, it may be just a meme, but like it's gonna touch somebody when they see like it's okay to not be okay, or you know, you have permission to say no and to just, you know, take a break or whatever it is. So, you know, I think there's one place I follow is called the Nap Ministry, and they're always trying to tell people, so it's okay to get some rest now, take a nap.
Oh, I need to be a member of the Nap Ministry. I could totally see myself being in that group.
Oh my God. And funny enough, Nikita, this is how I came into Nike after your mom passed away and you were like, actually, you were like, I can't take it anymore. I'm not like, this job doesn't make any sense. I need to like, you know, just take it down and focus on me. And so you were moving out of your role and that's actually how I came in. So
yeah, 100%. And then to add more to that, I ended up taking on a greater role, right? So I didn't step down at all.
And well, so I get on you all the time. So Shanito, I'm gonna tell you the real truth. Nikita wanted to be the receptionist.
She gave me like, no touch point. I just want to just get my little check. I come in 9 to 5.
Just do my little part. Shanita, I was trying to just do my little part. Do you understand what I'm saying? Keep my little stock options, keep this little check rolling and be like, thank you for calling Nike. How can I help you? And then, but look, here's what I was really after. At 5 p.m., when I turned the phones off, I would just walk away and my brain would just be so free and clear.
Right.
And I'd be ready for 9 a.m. That's what I wanted because right. I've never experienced that. Any job I've ever had. You know,
yeah.
5 o'clock don't mean nothing. 8 o'clock don't mean nothing. Saturday and Sunday definitely don't mean nothing. Holiday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, this is another day because we on the grind, right? And so I was tired, you know, I'm like, no. Mm-mm. So yes, Muhammada, and you know, you always try to talk about me, you know. You don't want me to tell your business.
Oh my God, but anyway, so listen, instead of Nikita being the receptionist, she turned into like the director. I don't know how, like Pam is like a whisperer or something. She talked to you out of A, not quitting. She talked you out of being the receptionist and suckered you into like taking over her role as the director when she went on sabbatical. How that all happened, I still, like, I don't
extremely,
even know.
Listen, let me tell you, extremely convincing. And, you know, I guess you got to know what motivates people. And so you put enough zeros in there and you might have my attention.
Okay. Okay.
Enough, though, I just texted with Pam 2 days ago. Oh, wow. And, you know, yeah, so she's well, showed me pictures of her grandkids, the whole nine. But, you know, again, just talk about mentorship, right? And the importance of us sticking together as women, even though Pam's not a Black woman, but just as women, right? I did learn so much. As when she went away and I was the director, and so much of those lessons really did contribute to, you know, even where I am today and what I'm doing today. And so, you know, it was worth the risk and it was worth the chance that the opportunity that I had to take that. I just wish that alongside of that opportunity, that there was also an opportunity and a space where I could really get help in terms of dealing with my emotional distress and just how, you know, yeah, at work, you have it together, you're doing your thing, you're running your teams, you're, you know, moving these athletes around and working with celebrities, yeah, but there's a hole in your heart because your mom is gone. And then like Shanita said, then after that, you know, my grandmother and my aunt, and my uncle, and, you know, just so much loss that the only thing I knew how to do was just keep going. And I think at a certain point, all of this stuff catches up with you and you will, either you're gonna sit down or you will get sat down. Like my grandmother used to say, you will get sat down if you don't deal with it. So yeah.
Well, wow, we've been on a journey, but like before we end, Shanita, talk to us about what you're doing now, the role that you have, and Leah, what's happening with you now in your career? Okay, would you rather not?
Well, no, I mean, it you know, it can't, I really kind of was and was not looking for a position like this, but it came and I got a call from a recruiter and they're like, oh, we got your CV. And she must have been British. So I'm like, you got your CV and, you know, I want to talk to you about this role. And I'm like, okay. So it was back at Universal. It was in with Verve Records, which is jazz and classical music and some other, you know, alternative types of music, not necessarily, let's say, R&B or whatever it is. So it was definitely a departure from what I know, like the back of my hand. So it definitely was going to be a learning experience too. And basically, like, you know, learning the new music and how, you know, to best get that, you know, to market. So I, you know, at the time, was still independent. And I remember I had just gotten stiffed on a check by someone, that I was doing an independent project from. And, I remember saying to myself, I was like, yo, I don't know how much more I could do this here. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And, my brother-in-law had just gotten killed. So when I got this, I was like, you know what? I can't again do this. And, you know, and so I decided to, you know, interview for the job and, you know, subsequently got it. So, you know, that's what I'm doing now. Definitely a different situation. It's rare, you know, that you actually have like the same kinds of close relationships with artists that we, you know, that I'm used to having, but you know, it's just been what, 2.5 years about since I've been there. So, you know, hopefully, you know, that culture will change just a little bit. It's a totally different thing. You know, like I think with the other labels that I was with, even Asylum with some of the acts, like, and I, you know, again, that's how I reconnected with Scarface. I worked with him at Def Jam for a minute, but then when Rap-A-Lot was signed through Warner, you know, got to know him again. And, you know, we just kind of had that, we just clicked. And, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, hopefully with this particular, you know, job that will happen again with certain artists, you know, but, you know, it's all about streaming and making sure those streaming numbers are popping, and it just don't pop for everybody. So.
Right. I know. Yeah. This is a whole new world, marketing and this 2022 times, like, wow, you've been able to like make that adjustment though, huh?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I have all of my gold and platinum plaques hanging in the garage. And so someone had asked me once, like, wow, like that's a lot. I said, you have no idea. I said, it's different than what you guys like. They have lowered the numbers now for, I said, but back then a platinum album meant 1 million pieces of your product is in folks' hands, right. Period, point blank. And we don't care if you listen to it one time or 55 times, that's it, done, 1 million, done. So I said, now you gotta figure out how many streams actually equal one sale. So no math here, just one album sold, you get paid. Right. So, but yeah, so that it's just like mind blowing now, just like how the numbers game changed so much. So,
mm-hmm. Wow, my God, I feel like this has been just such an incredible journey with you, and we've crossed paths and stories. And like, I think I was also mentioning to Nikita, just, I feel like, you know, just that period of time that you were at Def Jam has been more impactful on like popular culture, Black culture, you know, since like Motown was the first like major thing. And then like Def Jam was like the next thing that just like took over. And, you know, just to be a part of it, I'm like, y'all gotta do some kind of documentary or something. Cause like, especially all those women, I know I saw like one time some kind of photo project that you guys were a part of, but the stories, I need to hear it. What's up with that?
I think it's funny too, because my friend, she's like, I met her by being the head of the international department at Def Jam. She is, she's a Brit. So she came over to our offices at one point. You know, like they usually, you know, come just to kind of like get a, you know, kind of like feel, because it was Def Jam UK at the time. So she came over and she said she will never forget walking into, we used to have a meeting called, it was like a priorities meeting. And she would never forget walking in and literally seeing so many women sitting at the table and having a voice. She was like, it wasn't just that they were sitting at the table taking notes, but like we were actually like, okay, we should do this and we should do that. And we were being listened to. So she said that was the first time she'd ever seen that. Like, there's a lot of women running things. Like, that one's head of publicity. This one is head of radio. That one's over in marketing, like, and all of them, you know, senior titles. So yeah, we, you know, it was definitely, what a time to be alive.
Wow. Wow. Nikita, anything you'd like to add before we close out?
No, I'm just so happy and invigorated by this conversation, you know, having Shanita as one of our guests. You know, we mainly want to be able to encourage people and to help people think about, you know, their life and their careers differently. And I really think this episode did that. So I just want, you know, hats off to Shanita, just record exec, entrepreneur, overall businesswoman, incredible mom. I mean, just wearing all these hats and doing it with such style and grace. Just, you know, my hat's off to you. And just thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, I support the Soul Chronicles now.
And I know I've been saying, we're going to get you on here. And I was like, this is our first recording this year. And we kind of, you know, had took a little time off and we're back in. And I'm like, we got to get Shanita on here. So I'm so glad to have you. So glad always to catch up with you. I'm going to follow up because we need some photos, some videos. Let me see some of them platinum records, you know, so you'll
that flyer. I want to see that college flyer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I think it's on my Instagram, too. So
okay. Yeah. So see what you can find for us, Shanita, so we can share with our listeners, okay? And share on social media.
You got it. You got it.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us for this incredible journey today on the Soul Chronicles. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at the Soul Chronicles. Definitely, if you have any questions or comments, you can shoot them over to us and we'll try to get them to Shanita so she can answer any questions that you might have. So yeah, we thank you for tuning in and stay tuned for another exciting episode of the Soul Chronicles very soon.
Bye everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.